weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 309 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I get to talk with Seth Peck and Jeremy Hahn from the successful Image comic, The Realm. We talk about what the book is about, who the characters are, and we go pretty in-depth as to what to expect when you pick up your copy of the comic at your local store. We talk about how they work together to bring The Realm to you, as well as what we can expect from them in the future. Then everything wraps up with a yearly holiday tradition of mine that I'm sure you'll enjoy. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Seth Peck, probably best known for X-Men and Other Good Things. And return to the podcast, glad to see, is Jeremy Hahn, who, Dino Days, Beauty, Batwoman, all kinds of good things. You two guys now have a new book out from Image called The Realm. Seth, why don't you say hi? How are you?
Hi, nice to meet you, and thanks for having us on.
Good. And Jeremy, how are you doing?
I am good. Thanks for having me back, man.
Good, good. It's good to talk with you guys. Of course, I see Jeremy in the conventions all the time. Do you go to conventions, Seth? I don't think I've seen you at a convention.
I don't do many. I always usually do the local one here, Planet, in Kansas City. And I like to go to New York just because I like New York, but I don't do a lot of conventions, no. I'm a teacher full-time, so I don't have a ton of free time.
Oh. And he's a part-time recluse, too.
Yeah, that's true. I am a bit of a recluse. And then, you know, conventions as a writer aren't. There's just not as much, for you to do as a writer, maybe, as there is for an artist. So
that's true. You can see an artist sometimes sketching. If there's nothing really going on for them, they'll start to do some work. You know, they can do some drawing and stuff like that. It's hard for a writer to write during a convention.
That's true. That is true. And I don't have a ton of work out. I mean, it's sporadic. So it's, you know, I'm probably going to do more conventions now that I kind of have something coming out regularly. So,
and Jeremy, how about you? I mean, as far as, because I see you at conventions quite a bit. You go to pretty many. I think I saw you at San Diego, New York, and all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to too many conventions, if I'm being perfectly honest. Well, I mean, the trick of it is, when you are doing a creator-owned book, you've got to get the name out there. You know, you've got to get it in people's hands. I always look at it like, you know, every time that I get to put one new book in somebody's hands, you know, I probably have somebody that's going to read another issue. So, you know, I go to as many shows as I can.
Right, right, which is good. Well, I appreciate it. It gives me a chance to catch up with you. And if I've missed any of your books, I can get them from you, which is always a good thing.
But, yeah.
All right, so let's get on with the Realm, I think we should dive into, which is your new book out from Image Comics. Seth, is this your first one from Image?
No, I've done a couple. I've done a couple anthologies. I did a 24/7 anthology that Ivan Brandon put together quite a while ago. I did a story in there with Raphael Albuquerque, and then I did the Tori Amos anthology that had probably 100 different people in it. And then I've done a few. I did Sorrow with Rick Remender and Francesco Francavilla there. And then I did another series called 76, but it's been a while. I mean, it's been 5 or 6 years probably since I've had anything there.
Okay, okay. Now, Jeremy, of course, you have Beauty going on, which is,
yeah.
Can you give me, just before we dive into The Realm, a quick update on how Beauty is doing?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. We actually just finished writing issue 21 last night, in fact. And then issue 20 is being drawn right now. Issue 18, I think, is getting ready to hit the stands in a couple weeks. We're plugging right along on it. We're having a good time. It's one of those books that I think that we get to do something different with each arc and have a good time. And we're probably going to continue it for the foreseeable future. I mean, you also have to be a little cautious, and obviously you don't want to put stuff out there if people are done reading, but people seem to dig it. So
it's a great concept. I really love it. The whole notion that people become beautiful and it's deadly. I love that whole business. I think that's great, because it's opposite of what we think in our world, as far as that goes. So it's great stuff. Now, why don't we get onto the realm? Because I got two of you. I'm never quite sure to ask these kinds of questions, but how would you describe the realm to somebody who may not know about it? I know there's four issues, as we mentioned, and we got more coming. I've seen it described as like a mashup between a couple of different genres, but how do you guys describe it? Maybe start with you, Seth, and see how you do.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple, I think, kind of shorthand ways to summarize it. I would say, like, it's kind of a Lord of the Rings meets Mad Max, or, you know, kind of the Walking Dead for the D&D crowd. I mean, it's kind of fantasy. It's kind of survival. It's kind of post-apocalyptic. Yeah, I don't know. I guess the quick version of the way to summarize it. But it's kind of about people dealing with the end of the world. And instead of a nuclear disaster, it's sort of a world that's been overrun by monsters and creatures that we think of as mythical, dragons and orcs and trolls and that kind of thing. So it's like that. If it's like Mad Max, if instead of running out of gasoline and having nuclear weapons go off, there's trolls and orcs trying to kill everyone and see where it goes.
So it's a little different from other books like that. Jeremy, you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I mean, and it's also, it's a kind of a quest book. It's people trying to fix a broken world. Much in the way, like Seth said, you know, that you get in something like The Walking Dead or whatever, but it definitely plays to all of the things that anybody that enjoyed role-playing games or board games, any of that fun stuff from when we were kids and now. I'm playing Pathfinder regularly now, so I guess even as adults, we're getting to enjoy this stuff. Mm-hmm.
Now, another question I've got for you guys is, you know, I noticed that Seth, you guys are listed as co-creators. That's the thing that interests me, because I know, Jeremy, you can write as well as draw, and, you know, not everybody can do all of that. I'm just kind of curious, do you guys work together as far as the script goes, or Seth, do you provide the script to Jeremy and he goes off with it? How do you guys do that?
Yeah, it's very much a collaboration, which is why I think we are listed as co-creators. We usually talk the story out. You know, I mean, we kind of have loose discussions of where we want to go, and then we kind of sit down and think about what we think we'd like to try to fit in the next issue. And then I'll generally write a script, and then Jeremy will take the script and do thumbnails, and we'll kind of bounce things around and see what changes we want to make. And then, you know, once we've kind of agreed on that, Jeremy will actually start doing the pencils and ink. So yeah, it's very much collaborative. If I have an idea for a visual or something I want in there, I'll kind of sketch it out for Jeremy. And if he has a, you know, something he thinks works well in the story, or he's itching to draw a particular thing, you know, we try and do that, because it's, you know, it's ours. And, you know, to try and capitalize on that freedom and doing the things that are fun for us as creators, and just having a chance to kind of play with things we like to play with. And so it's very much the both of us sort of working together to have it take shape.
Okay. Now, of course, I'll ask you, Jeremy, this. Do you guys know, I mean, should the day come when the realm has to conclude, do you guys know where we're going? I mean, where this is all going to end up?
Yeah. I mean, we're not in any hurry to get there at all. But, I mean, we look at it like any epic quest, I think. When we were working on it initially, we talked a lot about this Stephen King Gunslinger series, the Dark Tower series that he wrote, or Lord of the Rings, or these books that I really loved, the Dragonlance series back in the day from TSR, these novels, you know, and they were always many, many, you know, you'd get three, four, however many novels that would be the whole story. And so we kind of know what the beginning, middle, and end of this need to be. Mm-hmm. But the great thing about it is we can tell all these stories along the way and really flesh out the world and have fun. I think that I personally appreciate the idea that stories need to end, but I don't really ever, the ones that I really like are long form things. You know, I think if we could do 75 issues of this book, we would. It's just, you know, a lot, like I said earlier with the beauty, a lot of it depends on, you know, interest of the readership. And if people like it and they continue to like it, and you know, we can feed our families doing it, then we're going to continue it for as long as humanly possible.
Which is great. Now, I've been reading some of the reviews of The Realm. I like the book. I really enjoy it a lot. I get a chance to, like they say, you're doing kind of a mixture thing that I haven't seen before, which is kind of fascinating me. But one of the things that gets me, is, and I've read this in the reviews, is that you don't necessarily explain everything that's going on. I mean, you know, we get dropped into the world of The Realm without any explanation as to how the world got this way. And, you know, a lot of people, there are people I know who don't like that. They don't want to be in the dark, as they like to put it. There was a guy who complained bitterly. It was a book called Batman Eternal. It was a year-long weekly series. In issue 26, they introduced the Big Bad. And people just went on and complained about why did they wait till issue 26 to do this. And when I got to talk to James Tynion about it, he just laughed and laughed. He said, well, it was time. We, you know, we weren't ready before that. And I guess with this one here, too, the good news is it's not talking down to the audience, I think, Seth. And it's one of the things I like about the book is that it's very intelligent. And, you know, the way that the storytelling is going and the plotting is done very smartly, I think. And it does not look at us and say, well, you won't know what's going on if we don't put a word balloon from every person describing their thoughts and feelings all the time. So I like that about the book, Seth.
Well, thank you. And yeah, I mean, that's very much by design. And I would say that I've heard people, even friends of mine and stuff, say the same thing about we kind of get dropped into it, but how did it get this way? But I would say for every one person that says that, I have five or more probably that say what you just said. And that's that they appreciate the fact that we kind of just jump into the story. And that's really what the book is about. It's not about how they got there. It's about where they're going now. And, you know, I try to tell people there's not like a giant, you know, it's not like there's no Laura Palmer's murderer out there. There's no like big secret out there that we're hiding. I mean, what happened happened, and it's, we'll kind of fill that in and you'll see bits and pieces, but only kind of as it serves the larger story. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to think that that's the interesting part. The interesting part is what we're doing. And I think we didn't want to spend issue after issue of kind of the world falling apart. We thought it'd be more fun to jump in with people trying to put it back together. And the story moves faster that way. I think look at a movie like, you know, and Jeremy and I share a mutual love of Fury Road. I mean, that's a movie that doesn't really, it kind of drops you into it. It takes off and it doesn't really slow down. And I think that's what people like about it. You know, you don't need a bunch of exposition. You don't need to know everything about the world. You're in the moment. You're not worrying about, you know, why does that guy have that tattoo? Or what does this mean? What does that mean? You know, you're enjoying the ride. And I think that's what we're trying to kind of go for. So
I think that, and I identify with this in some ways, I think that people, they always think they want the answers, but then I don't think you really want the answers. it's like, I think if we laid everything out, I think then what do you have to tell?
So you can't really put the genie back in the bottle. You know, kind of once we knew who Wolverine was, that mystery is kind of done. And I always kind of miss the fact that I liked when Logan was, you know, sort of this guy you didn't know much about. He was much more intriguing. Kind of once you have those answers, it sort of takes some of the magic out of it. But
I was going to say, and we obviously are going to answer. I mean, like, as we go, we throw a lot of questions out there and various things, and we'll get to things. I think that I just always think that, especially with a book that's this big with such an ensemble cast, it's like if you spent every issue, especially in the first arc, explaining everything, that's all you'd do. Like, you would literally be like, okay, well, this is exactly how the mechanic of the spires coming to our plane of existence, like how that works. If, you know, you'd say, this is exactly what's wrong with Will's arm. You can say that, but we'll give and we'll take away and we'll, don't worry, we know the answers to this
stuff. Yeah, we didn't just throw stuff out there. I mean, I will say that, like, if people have questions about specific things, I mean, there are answers forthcoming. Everything that's there that, you know, we've planted, it's there for a reason, and we know why it's there. So if people are patient and kind of let the story move the way it's supposed to, they'll find out.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I like about the story is the way that it moves along at a rapid clip. The way the very first book opens up is Nolan, who is the character around which we seem to have a lot going on, he takes a girl to the king, and it obviously looks like New York there. So this guy has obviously set up some sort of domain in the middle of New York or someplace. And what happens was a real surprise to me. I mean, you know, Nolan goes and presents to the king. He doesn't want to pay Nolan, of course, and then things surprised me as how that resolved. So I like the way that you, and I also like the fact you've got, like, gnomes and other kinds of mythological creatures in there. And so I'm never quite sure what you guys are going to do next. And I think as a writer, Seth, that must be a lot of fun for you, because depending on what's happening, you can go a different place.
Exactly. And that's, you know, what Jeremy said about us kind of, you know, knowing where our middle point is and where we're in. But we left room in the middle because, you know, as a creator, you don't know sometimes as you start to tell a story, you know, not just what will people respond to, but what will you as a creator respond to? You know, you may find a character that you had big plans for as you start to write them. They just don't quite feel the way you wanted them to. And you may find another character that you didn't have as much plan for kind of does something that is interesting. So I think, you know, you want to leave room for yourself to be able to kind of experiment and try stuff out with different things. And that keeps things fresh for the reader, but, you know, for the creator too. I mean, you know, people are only going to be as excited about a project as you are, you know, and if you, the person creating it, aren't having fun and aren't excited, you know, odds are the people reading it aren't going to be either. So,
Now, of course, art wise, Jeremy, you get to do the same thing kind of, as he's doing with the plotting and stuff like that. You get in the middle of a what appears to be a demolished New York, and then you get to draw gnomes, and you get to draw all kinds of different kinds of characters in it. From an artist's perspective, I mean, is this a lot of fun for you to do?
Oh yeah, this is. I mean, the reason that I chose to do this book instead of any of the other things that I could do is because it's just everything that I want to be drawing all in one place. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we kind of said from the beginning was that in this book, in this creative process, we're not going to have any no's. Like, there's never, no, we can't do that. Because if we want to do something, we're going to do it. And in fact, we're going to have a hell of a lot of fun with it. And we've challenged each other several times. I think, you know, it's a big cast and a big world, and there's a lot of stuff going on. And I think I've nearly broken myself a few times drawing so much. Mm-hmm. But that's fun. And that's me getting to do things that I've never had the opportunity to do before. Mm-hmm. So I'll take it.
Well, it must be like a challenge because, you know, the great, you know, when you're drawing a superhero book, you have a certain palette you're going to draw from. Uh-huh. You know, good guy, bad guy, city, usually, particularly New York, if it's Marvel, you're going to do a lot of those kinds of things. But this book gives you a chance to do a whole lot of variety as far as things go. And, you know, you get to draw people in a black robe with a skull and, like, a crown on. And you get to draw somebody who looks like the Crow in some levels and stuff like that. So, and Nolan, the main guy, is somebody we can relate to because we kind of visually understand who he is. So that gives you a lot of opportunity, it seems to me, to kind of stretch those muscles you may not get to do in other books.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And as an artist, I think that all too often we can become set in our ways. We know how to draw this kind of thing. You know, I know how to draw a book with one moody character. I know how to draw the hell out of people wearing suits and ties in dimly lit parking lots. You know, I know how to do these things. But the idea of having a scene with a crazy tentacle monster fighting against a bunch of orcs or whatever, like, that's not something that I readily always, you know, can easily know how to draw. And I have to figure that out. It's a puzzle. And I enjoy puzzles. I enjoy the passion of creativity. It's why I wake up in the morning.
Cool. Now, I want to get into some of the characters. And if I go someplace that you guys really don't want to talk about, just let me know. But, like, the main character I'm interested in, Nolan. He's got some interesting stuff going on with him. He's not named after Christopher Nolan, is he?
I'll be honest. I don't know where Will came from. I'm a big hockey fan. I played hockey when I was younger, and there was a hockey player I used to like named Owen Nolan. Mm-hmm. And my son's name is Owen, and Jeremy also has a son named Owen. So I was kind of joking that I would name the character Owen, and I think I thought of Owen Nolan, and I don't know where Will came from. So he's not really specifically named after anyone. But
talk about the character a little bit, though. Would you, as far as things go, who he is? I mean, you know, he's obviously somebody who's trained in survival and being able to do things and to take on other people. Although he tends not to have, I haven't seen any evidence of any kind of extra powers or anything like that. But so he's kind of the person around which the book revolves. Is there something you can tell us about him that wouldn't spoil who Nolan is?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, he's a guy that's, he's got training and he's got skills that have allowed him to sort of not just survive in this world, but flourish a little bit. I mean, he's kind of set himself up as someone that, you know, we use the term tour guide, but he's basically a person that for money will get someone from point A to point B and get them through a dangerous area and get them through alive. And, you know, whether that's reuniting families that have been separated by this apocalypse, or it's much more, you know, strictly a profit motive type of thing. That's kind of what he does. And he's very pragmatic and kind of knows what he's doing and doesn't have a ton of emotional attachments. And as you see in the first issue, he does have sort of a secret. There's something going on with him that's not quite normal. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, a big plot line that'll be playing out in coming issues. But mm-hmm. it's a group. It's very much a cast, an ensemble cast of characters. And he kind of is the linchpin in that. I think he's an archetype that I think people can sort of put their finger on quickly and kind of know at least roughly where he's coming from. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of the grounding character, maybe. And he does get a lot of face time, I think, in the first arc. But as the story goes on, that changes a bit, and we get to see some more people. But
cool.
Yeah.
Good. Now, of course, Jeremy, how did you come up with the concept for him? Does he resemble anyone you know? Or like a lot of people these days tend to draw people like a well-known person. But I don't recognize him as somebody in the public eye. How did you come up with how Nolan looks?
I tend to base people somewhat on how, you know, people that I know personally. Now, I don't really do the casting actors, you know, from like, I think it would be weird if Nolan was based on Henry Cavill or something like that, you know, like, I mean, now that I say that, he actually kind of looks like Henry Cavill, but you know, like, if you lock the look of someone into anyone too specific, if you look and you see every time you look at a character, like, you know, you see, Sean Connery, you know, this is the, you know, the Sean Connery, this is Halle Berry, this is whoever it is. I think that's all you see sometimes. So I feel like it's really important that you have to get beyond that and have an experience with the characters and keep them unique. But, you know, but I do base them on people visually that I know personally, just to kind of get specific traits down. You know, I love the human face. I love the idea that you're going to look different than I do. And, you know, Seth, while we are all getting kind of gray bearded in our old age, everybody looks a little bit different. And I love those interesting looks. The great thing that we kind of did with each character was tried to figure out the mixture of post-apocalyptic stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so you've got like just the clothes that we have now, mm-hmm. mixed with fantasy weapons and various things like that, you know, adding in like, we have characters that wear kind of capes and hoods, things like that. And then figuring out like what weapons they would use and all this stuff. And being a guy that's fascinated by film design and video game design, I looked at a lot of that. And I looked at kind of the iconography of what makes, you know, the Star Wars films so iconic, the characters, you know, what makes Han Solo look like a really cool hero from moment one. And I said, okay, I want these elements, these kinds of things to be part of the costuming for Will's character. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you know, we spent a long time doing it. We spent longer developing this book than anything else that I've ever worked on. And I think it pays off. Mm-hmm.
It's really great. I mean, I like the Nolan character quite a bit. I think he's a fun guy to go. And you're right, there is some secret to him. I don't think it's a power. I don't know quite sure what it is. Of course, that's like we talk about. You guys don't spill your guts all the time. And so I have to come back and find out what's going on with that, which is very appealing to me, which I like. But you did mention a cape. And it brings to mind this other character you have in the book who wears a red cape and has like a skull, almost like a ram horn kind of a skull mask. And he carries around like an axe or hatchet or something, and he's called the Beast when he first shows up. What more can you shed a little more light on that character, Seth, as far as that goes?
Yeah, Jeremy's gonna give me a hard time because he thinks I play favorites, and that's kind of one of my favorite characters, but I think he's one that we kind of came up with the visual for. Like we knew kind of what we wanted, and we were kind of looking at like a Viking meets, you know, like an army ranger was kind of our starting point for the character. And yeah, I mean, he was a character that I kind of think we knew right off the bat people would gravitate towards visually, because he's cool looking, and he does cool stuff. And yeah, he's got a shotgun with a brush hook for a bayonet on it that he can kind of throw around. And he's got a mask with orc teeth and stuff glued on it. And yeah, I mean, that's credit to Jeremy for making a guy that, you know, the second people saw him, they kind of instantly wanted to know more about him. And you definitely will see a lot more of him. I mean, he's one of the main characters that is in the book, and he doesn't start off in the same place as most of the other characters, but I mean, as you can probably guess, they'll all be meeting up at some point and encountering each other, and his kind of motives and what he's doing and what his purpose is in the overall story will kind of come to be. His name's Ben. I don't know. I'm sure we say that at some point. It's not really a secret, but I don't think to this point in the book, I don't think he's appeared with any human beings. So he's only been killing monsters. So nobody's called him by name, but he'll be in the book more as it goes.
Of course, again, I don't want to discourage anybody. A lot of things do get explained. But, you know, this guy comes out and he's got a totally separate storyline at the beginning. And, you know, at least so far in the first four issues that I've read, I don't see him interacting with any other people.
Yeah, no. His story sort of is running parallel to the other ones. And you're sort of watching. And in fact, I think in the third or fourth issue, I kind of lose track as to where they are. But there are several parallel stories, and if you're paying attention, you can tell they're all sort of on a collision course with each other. So, you know, again, that's intentional too. It's hard from a writing standpoint, from an art standpoint, and really honestly just from the audience standpoint, to have like 12 or 15 people all doing everything together in every scene. So if you can kind of spread people out and give them something interesting to be doing, and that all ends up making the story stronger, and whether it's the sort of main cast of heroes split up into groups, or you've got Johnny Eldridge, kind of the villain of the story, or at least the villain so far, has his own storyline running. So there's a lot of parallel threads that all will be meeting up soon.
See, I want to talk about that character in a minute, but I want to get Jeremy. You talked about capes, and Seth thinks that you don't particularly care that he favors that guy very much. As far as like putting him together visually, and you know, and he says that, and I agree with him that he's one of the ones that attracts us because the comic format works really well with him. How did you come up with his appearance and the things that go on with him visually?
Well, I mean, more than I think any other character in the book, Ben, I mean, he was pretty whole cloth, like from moment one. Like, you know, Seth said, "What about this?" And like immediately it just, the look came out. You know, I think I drew him twice when we were just talking about him.
You nailed him quick. And I'd say Johnny is the other character that's like that. Like Jeremy kind of, sometimes you go through multiple iterations of a character, but some of these he kind of nailed right away. And you can kind of tell, you know, I think we kind of make the reference that like characters like that, they kind of look lived in, you know, like they look like there's a familiarity to them, or they seem like there's some depth. And I think it's because artistically, like Jeremy just kind of gets them.
Mm-hmm. And I like to bust Seth's balls about Ben, you know, being his favorite. But I mean, like, there's a reason that Ben is his favorite. And there's a reason that every single person that reads the book is like, I like that guy. I mean, my kid was talking about it the other day. I'm like, because he just recently read the books, and I was like, who do you like? And he's like, oh, you know, I like, I remember who the other character was. Oh, and it was he likes Zach, the kid. He likes the kid because the kid's in it. But then he was like, and I also like Ben, the big Viking guy. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Well, it makes sense. He's got a cool mask and he's a big beard, and you know, it's just, and he's massively fun to draw too. I think that I did not skimp on any of the costumes as far as the level of intricacy to what they wear, which is hard for me. Mm-hmm. But I also think that it pays off in the fact that he looks cool. You know, he's got a cool weapon. Everything about him is a lot of fun.
Now, you guys mentioned, and they call him Johnny Eldred or something, what you call him? That's the guy with the black outfit and the feathers and the long black hair. Is that who that guy is?
Yes. Yeah. He's kind of one of the, you know, one of the bad guys. He's the one of the primary bad guys that you, I think, through issue four that we've met. And he's got a very interesting backstory that we'll get into more. But he's kind of a, I don't know. I think we, when we first started talking about him, we almost thought of like if Marilyn Manson was genuinely scary and not, you know, not if it wasn't all theatrics, if you actually had a guy that was legitimately, you know, kind of creepy warlock, rock star, necromancer sort of guy that you know, I think at times maybe takes himself too seriously, but mm-hmm. has some genuine evil to him. Is genuinely a bad guy. He's not putting on an act to scare people or, mm-hmm. you know, sell records or whatever. He's genuinely a murderer, genuinely a bad guy that has a hold of some power and is out for himself and sort of in the service of this greater evil that will end up being sort of the primary force that our heroes are working against. But, you know, the sort of the earthly agent of that force at this moment is Johnny. And he's an important character, too. I mean, he's not a cackling bad guy that's sort of one note. I mean, I think people are going to find that he's got an interesting story. And, mm-hmm. and I think people will, I don't know if you'll like him, but I think people will like to read about him.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to mention, too, in the very first issue, and this is where I think, Jeremy, you did a beautiful job on the artwork, is in order to talk to the person that he's serving, this Johnny has to kill somebody. And through that body, the person speaks. And then there's this transferal kind of thing that really creeped me out. Well, the whole business about killing somebody and all the red blood and stuff that was around. And then the dark shadow and stuff that kind of moves over and strengthens him. I really love the way that you drew that and made that happen, because it creeped me out when I saw that. That was just, you did a great job with that, Jeremy.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we had a lot of fun with that scene. And I think that Seth and I know what creeps us out. And, you know, when I was about 11 years old, I was kind of terrified of everything. Mm. And so my answer to that was I was going to watch every horror movie at the video store, because I was so scared of Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers and all these things. I decided that I was going to go the other way. And so now as an adult, like, I'm not scared of stuff at all. Like, I don't have like irrational fear of anything. And so I'm always seeking that feeling of something that creeps me out. So I think when we tell stories, Seth and I try to work in things that are creepy to us, things that are upsetting or off-putting. And yeah, we get a lot of those chances with Johnny, you know, just these things that the idea of just this brutal scene where he murders somebody and then the thing that creeps out, you know, being the thing that is used for communication. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to go to Molly and I'm going to ask you first, Jeremy, about how she looks and what she looks like. She's kind of the one that is taking a group of scientists to a certain place, and that's where Nolan gets involved. He's going to take them around. And she's got a very unique look. She's kind of, it looks like she's got, it's either a mask or a paint on her face that gives her a look like she's got a black mask on. Talk about creating this character. You know, we don't see a lot of women in the book, at least not compared to the men. There's a lot of men around, but she's one of the few that we meet, particularly early, except for the girl with the king's daughter that we see at the beginning.
Yeah.
She's the one that really stands out to me in the sense that she's going to be an ongoing character as things go on. Jeremy, how did you decide to, you know, her look and what kinds of things we would expect to see from her?
When we were talking about the book, we spoke about it in very general terms, the characters in the beginning. You know, we had sort of archetypes that we wanted to hit on. You know, we wanted this person to be kind of a, you know, like more of a wizard, and this kind of character was more of a ranger, and this kind of, but then very quickly we built beyond those archetypes, but we didn't really have a lot of detail down initially for a lot of them. And Molly's character was this linchpin for everything. She's the catalyst that starts the entire story. You know, Will's off doing his thing, and then they hire Will to take them back where they're going. And I always kind of looked at the story like, if you're looking at the main characters, it's really Will and Molly's story. Mm. You know, it's a two-hander. It starts off with more Will, but like as it goes, you understand that like Molly is equally important, and more so in a lot of ways. But that generalization that we had in the beginning, we didn't have race in there. We didn't have anything. And I just started kind of doodling and playing around with looks and kind of what I wanted. And I didn't want Molly to be white. Mm-hmm. I really felt like, you know, it's just, I don't know. I love the idea. You know, we were talking for a while about different characters' race and stuff like that. And I'm like, ooh, I'd love for Molly to be a black woman. Mm-hmm. And when I started drawing her, it just clicked. It fit so well. And I loved her look. Mm-hmm. And you talked about the face paint that she has. I always imagined her having this cool hood, and I love her hair, but I kind of wanted something to tie it all together. And I was thinking about like Susie Sue and the Banshees, you know, how she always had that crazy punk rock makeup on. And I was like, she's ready for battle. This is her mask, even though it's just kind of, I guess, you know, and while we were talking about this, you know, Fury Road came out. Mm-hmm. And I love Furiosa's, you know, war paint that she puts on, too. Mm-hmm. I love the idea that people, they have, like, they pull up their hood and that's their, they're ready to go kind of thing or mm-hmm. whatever. And I just love that Molly has this war paint that she has on all the time. And it's part of her strength. It's part of who she is inherently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Now, Seth, what can you add about her character? What kinds of things should we know without spoiling anything?
I think like Jeremy said, you know, the book sort of starts off looking like maybe Will sort of is the main and Molly sort of maybe, you know, a 1A or 1B or whatever. And I think as the story goes, she'll become, I wouldn't say there's a main character, but I think she's probably kind of the touchstone character. I think people can probably identify with Molly in the long run more. I think Molly's a little bit more like someone that we know as opposed to like a cool Han Solo-y pragmatic guy like Will. I think maybe it's easy to attach to Molly emotionally a little more. Mm-hmm. But I also think she's very capable in her own way too. I mean, I think there's probably a recognizable shortage of strong female characters in comics. And mm-hmm. while I don't think we intentionally said, let's make a comic book, let's make a strong female Lee. I mean, I think it was important for us both to make sure that we represented both sides of things fairly. And mm-hmm. you know, I guess it's always a challenge to sometimes for, you know, me as a writer to write female characters and feel like I'm doing it justice or that I'm being responsible with that or whatever. But, you know, I definitely wanted to make sure that we had a cast that kind of represented all types of people. And I don't know, I think she kind of quickly became a favorite of ours. And I think Jeremy nailing the visuals kind of really brought that home for me. Like she kind of really felt real once I saw the design and kind of felt like I knew her a little more. And I don't know. I mean, I think she might be, of all the characters in the book, if I actually were going to know one of them or, you know, if I was going to hang out with them, I think she's probably the best all-around person in the book. And she's got some interesting stuff ahead, too. So
cool. Now, there's one character I just want to touch on briefly who's very mysterious, who Will refers to as Batman, which I got a kick out of. Because he's in a room talking to somebody, and then he says, okay, Rook. And, of course, Rook is the name, but refers to her as Batman. And drop out of the ceiling, she does, and she's got a really interesting face mask and stuff. And I like that character, but she's so mysterious, I probably don't want to ask any more questions about that, because I think we'll learn things as we go along. What I want to end up on the characters is Zach. Jeremy, you said your son likes this character a lot, the kind of the teenage blonde boy of the bunch, who's got a very unique set of circumstances going on. There's one part, and I'll just quote real quickly what it says, is that they're at they're around a campfire of sorts, and Zach kind of introduces himself. He says, I don't know where my family is, and I don't even know how I got here. I've just been walking for a long time. And, you know, they question him about that kind of stuff. So, Seth, talk about Zach. I mean, as a young boy surviving in what seems to be like a post-apocalyptic era, you know, they question how he survived, and I think rightfully so. What can you tell us about Zach at this point? Because we're 4 issues in, and we kind of see him in the first issue 3. Talk about Zach a little bit.
Yeah, and Jeremy, help me out here, because I know 4 came out, I think, today. Is kind of the big Zach moment at the beginning of 4, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so I won't spoil it for anyone that's still catching up since 4 just came out today. But, how a young kid survives in that world by himself is a very interesting question. How is that possible? And you see at the beginning of 4 how that's possible. It's a pretty unconventional way of survival, and it leads to more questions. But, yeah, I mean, there's something very unique about him, and it's unclear at this point whether he understands it or not and kind of where that puts him, you know, in the grand scheme of things. You know, if you try to look at things black and white kind of in this universe, you know, the things that are, you know, non-magical and non-monster, you know, things that we think of as existing in our world, that's kind of the good guys. And for lack of a, you know, more complicated way of looking at it, you know, the monsters and the magic stuff, like that all came from this other world that, you know, would appear to predominantly be evil. So when you encounter characters that sort of walk the line or have a foot in both of those worlds that are from our world but somehow are now accessing magical stuff, it leads to the question of, well, is that good magic or is it bad magic? And whether it's kind of Will's secret or Zach's secret or kind of these other characters that sort of have supernatural twists on them or have connections to this magical realm. That'll sort of be the bigger question as we go along, is what's their motive? Are they good? Are they evil? And how does that power, or how does access to that stuff, how does it change you? How does it, you know, if you're a good guy that obtains that power, do you stay good, or does it slowly turn you the way it's turned other things? So as we get to know Zach more and we see a little bit more about what his circumstances are, that'll be kind of the big question, is what is his deal, and is he what he says he is? Can he be trusted, and does he trust himself? So yeah, the end of three, the beginning of four is a pretty good moment, I think, for people that are kind of wanting to get a feel for what we're doing with the book. I think that's kind of a nice taste of the overall feel of what we're doing.
Now, what's interesting too, Jeremy, is the way that you have his appearance coming. He looks like a regular teenager. Everybody else has got survival type stuff on, jackets and hats and, you know, carrying stuff. And he just looks like a regular teenager, which is probably why your son liked him and stuff. And of course, he refers to Rook as Boba Fett, which I got a huge kick out of. Talk about making Zach look like somebody that we kind of feel like we know just looking at him, and this is why the puzzles are going to be so much fun to delve into with him.
Well, I mean, first off, the look of Zach's based on my oldest son. Okay. You know, he's a blonde-haired kid, you know, handsome guy. and I think that that's an easy in. I think that he looks like our idea of just a regular teenage kid. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, you know, have anything weird about him. You know, he's not wearing some crazy mask or a helmet or anything like that. He's a character that on one hand absolutely belongs with this crew, but on another doesn't quite really fit in the same way. He's identifiable more to us now, all of us, but he's kind of different in the scope of the comics. So it does raise a lot of questions. Can we trust him? What's wrong with him? Why is he like this? Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. I always kind of feel like there's a visual linchpin with every character. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a little something, and we'll kind of get into why he's wearing it, but he's wearing this oversized sweater, this cardigan, mm-hmm. with all these patches on it. Mm-hmm. And we'll explain a little bit more why he is, but we had a lot of fun with that. You know, I really felt like if you got just this normal kid wearing a normal t-shirt, normal jeans and normal sneakers, you know, you kind of give him this one other thing, and it's still a very normal thing, but there's reasoning behind it, both just emotionally for him, why he chose it.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. Now, I want to get into, too, about the plotting. I think the plotting goes along really well, and that there's lots of surprises on the way. We've focused a lot on the characters, but there are twists and turns in the plot and the story that kept me guessing from issue to issue so far up to number four. And so I want to let you guys know, I really think you're doing a great job with that. There just are surprises aplenty. And I like that when I'm reading a comic. I like to be pulled in and to be taken along and not know what's happening exactly, as we talked about. So I wanted to ask, issue four is out now. How many issues do we have planned for the realm? I know you're talking about ongoing. Is this, that's what this series is?
Yeah, yep. Ongoing.
Okay, so we can keep going. We won't have to worry about stopping. There's an interesting thing that happens at the end of every book. There's a band called Me Like Bees, and at the end, there's always a page that talks about a single that's inspired by the book, and yep. you can stream it at realmcomic.com, and it's available on iTunes and things like that. There are sometimes books that put out music lists that you should listen to as you're reading the book. Talk about this one, because this is a little different. You've got somebody that's actually inspired by the story to make music. I don't know, did they know both of you guys? Did they know one of you? How did this come to be?
So the band is from my hometown, Joplin, Missouri. And Me Like Bees, they're a popular regional band. I mean, they're nationwide, really. But they're a good indie band. Mm-hmm. And they play a lot in Kansas City. They play a lot in Joplin. And I have become really good friends with the frontman, Luke Schaefer. He's just a good guy. His wife owns a bakery in town. We hang out a lot. And we kept talking about that we needed to work together on something. And the idea originally was I would draw something for the band, you know, a promotional poster or an album cover or something like that, which would have been fun. But we just never made it line up. And kind of on a whim, as we were making the realm, I said, hey, you know, because we were doing the, oh, you know, we need to work together sometime thing again. And I was like, I'm going to flip this around. I am working on a comic right now. What if you did a theme song for it? Mm-hmm. And Luke was all in. He was like, yes, I will do that. Hmm. And then the plan was just one song. And then they met and they had so many ideas and got so excited about the project that one song turned into five songs, one for each issue of the first arc. And we're just like, okay, we're going to run with this. We're going to do a full EP. We're going to release it as a CD. It's all going to come together. And I don't know. I've loved the experience. You know, you always kind of worry when you're doing something like this. You're like, oh, you know, I like the band. I've heard their music before, but like, what if we don't click? Like, what if this isn't right? And it absolutely was. And just every song that they've come up with, I'm like, it's kind of silly to say, but like, I draw to those songs a lot. I listen to them over and over again just because they hit on the spirit of what we're doing so much.
That's cool. Well, it's really great because, again, I really enjoy the book. I think you guys are doing a great story. It pulls you in and you can't, you know, once you're pulled in, you can't get away from it because it's just, you got to get to the end. When you get to the end of the book, it's like, oh no, I got to wait another month for the next book. So it's very well told. I think that you guys are doing a great job with it. Speaking of which, okay, we've got four out this week. As far as number five, is it going to be a month from now? Is that when we'll see number five?
Yeah. What is it, like the end of next month? Yeah.
Yeah, we're monthly, and then we'll have a trade coming out that'll collect the first five issues. I don't know when exactly that comes out. Is that February or
January? No, it's actually, you're the worst. You were just terrible. No, it's mid-March.
Okay. Mid-March.
Okay. Uh-huh. Something to look forward to. Now, what's the future of the realm at this point, got to ask? I mean, you got one more issue to go. It's obvious you got a lot of story you can still draw on. Is there going to, will we see a second arc? Because, you know, Image books tend to take a month or two off in between arcs. Are you guys planning to do that and then hit it again?
Yeah. Yeah, the schedule, Jeremy's been killing himself, but he's keeping up. I mean, we're staying on pace, and, you know, there's the planned month there when the trade comes out that gives you a little bit of breathing room. But we've got more chugging along, and we're staying busy with it. So we're staying on schedule, and you know, that's one of the things that with a creator-owned book, it's difficult because you know there's a lot of work that goes into it. But at the same time, you know, the audience—that's how you keep readers, is by staying out and coming out when you're supposed to, and that's important to us. So we've definitely making sure that it happens.
That's called The Realm, of course, and comes from Image. And let your store know that you want to get that. And if you hadn't been keeping up with the regular issues, when that trade comes out, I highly recommend you get that so you're ready for when the second arc hits. Now, Jeremy, I know you keep busy and stuff, but I know you're still out on social media and stuff. You're on Facebook, right? Any other places?
Yeah, I do Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So I am Jeremy Hahn on Facebook. And then on Twitter and Instagram, I'm under Jer Hahn, J-E-R-H-A-U-N. And yeah, and you can follow me on those. And I do a lot of process desk shots of working on the book. You'll get some early sneak peeks into the black and white art, kind of what I'm doing, and all sorts of things.
Okay. How about you, Seth? Are you on Facebook? I know less about your stuff. Are you on Facebook or Twitter? Where do you do?
No, I'm a recluse, like Jeremy said. I'm a Luddite. I'm not anywhere. I'm in my house or at work. If people see me on the street, they're welcome to approach me and have a conversation. But no, I'm not.
Okay,
so I'm not. Unfortunately, Jeremy has to shoulder the load on that, which I know it's okay. You know, it's a necessity. I mean, it really is, and it's I'm kind of averse to it, and luckily Jeremy has been a sweetheart and sort of dealt with having to be the guy that takes that on and maintains that presence, and he's good about it. But I would always recommend people check his stuff out because it's he's always drawing something or eating something interesting, and it's fun.
Okay, because as a teacher, you probably are tired after talking all day. You probably don't want to go out on social media and talk some more. You're probably glad to get a little.
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, that's part of it. It's it's always tough to maintain that separation. You know, when I am a teacher, it's you kind of want to keep your private life private, and it's hard though. Creatively, I mean, there are it's nice to be able to interact with other people on that, but it's just it's a time thing for me, and
it works. Everybody gets to do what they want to do and what's important to them, so it's good. As long as you guys keep working and making The Realm as great as it is, I think that keep doing what you're doing because it's wonderful stuff. So
appreciate it, and it's been the fan response has been great. So we appreciate the people supporting us, and we're doing our best to keep justifying their faith and keeping them entertained.
examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And now it's time for my yearly holiday tradition, the playing of Twas the Dark Night Before Christmas. This video is actually available on YouTube. If you go to that site and look up Twas the Dark Night Before Christmas, you'll find it there. It's from the folks who do I'm a Marvel and I'm a DC kind of videos, and there are plenty of them. I think this is one of their first ones. What you really need to know is that there are three voices. The first one is Alfred, second one, of course, is Batman, and the third one is Santa Claus. And it has an interesting holiday message that I like to communicate. So without any further ado, Twas the Dark Night Before Christmas.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through Wayne Manor, not a sound could be heard, especially not laughter. There were no stockings hung and no tree filled with lights, not a single Christmas decoration in sight. Master Bruce in his costume, and I in my robe, were up late on the lookout for evils unknown. I missed Christmas, but he said he didn't have time. None at all ever since the tender age of 9. It saddened me watching him year after year, never taking in joy, only dealing out fear.
I say, sir,
I pleaded with all of my might,
Master Grayson is having a party tonight. Master Drake and Ms. Gordon are sure to be there. Why not leave this bleak cave and enjoy some fresh air?
I've outgrown Christmas, Alfred,
he answered each year.
You can go if you want to, but I'm needed here.
I sighed and walked upstairs to turn off the lights.
Merry Christmas,
I said. His reply was,
good night.
I walked up to my bedroom, got under my sheets, and prepared to drift off into sweet, peaceful sleep.
Suddenly, a noise woke me up with such a clatter, I ran to my window for more on the matter. And what should my wandering eyes happen to find but a man in a sleigh with 8 reindeer... No, 9! I was off to tell Master Bruce what I had spied. The fat man in the sleigh was in for a surprise. But it was my surprise. He had beaten me there. Just how fast was this man who could sled through the air?
Who are you?
Master Bruce yelled, demanding to know. The fat man's belly shook as he laughed.
Ho, ho, ho! Don't you know?
He asked, giving his heels a click.
Santa Claus, Father Christmas, Kris Kringle, Saint Nick!
The Batman moved slowly, not wanting to harm him.
Right, Santa. Let me take you back home to Arkham.
But the man disappeared. He was gone in a flash, leaving only some traces of old soot and ash. Suddenly, he was back just as soon as he left. This man was indeed quite fast in spite of his heft.
I've come here in peace,
said the man.
Have no fear,
Batman said.
Then explain to me why you've come here.
The jolly man laughed.
Christmas time is at hand. I bring gifts of joy to everyone in the land. The good people come to me with their requests for their heart's desire, and I do my best.
I need and want nothing from you,
Batman said.
Go and take to the streets of Gotham with your sled.
The man in red snickered and gave him a wink.
The person I'm here for is not who you think. I've no gift for you, though you've done much good, it's true. But the present I'm bringing tonight, well, is you. For when it comes to Christmas, you just disappear, and you leave behind all of the friends you hold dear.
Bruce said,
hold on a minute now. That isn't true. I give plenty of presents at Christmas. I do. Gifts of cash, food, drink, clothes, anything I can find. So then how can you say that I leave them behind?
Giving gifts is something for which you've had a knack. But the spirit of Christmas is still what you lack. Your gifts are all sent, none given face to face, and you've never even accepted an embrace. If you're given a gift, you just turn it away, denying your friends what their hearts want to say.
I know all of their feelings, and they all know mine. Gifts are simply a symbol for which I've no time.
Well, Christmas is a time for which I've always felt allowing others in. Let your defenses melt.
My defenses are fine.
Batman furrowed his brow.
It's just a sign of weakness to let them go down.
Santa sighed.
I have never, as long as I've lived, had to teach 'tis better to receive than to give.
I came here to open up your heart and your mind. You're determined to keep them both closed up, I find. You're just too filled with anger and pain and regret. Probably about both of your parents, I bet. You'd tell them you loved them if you could somehow, just like all of your friends want to tell you right now. Oh, the gift of allowing love to be expressed is one of the greatest gifts that one can get. For the past is behind us, the future unknown, and the moment is all that we have to call home. And so, now I leave you with this to think on.
And with that, this St. Nicholas fellow was gone. The master was silent. He was lost in thought. I wondered if this was what that fat man sought.
Alfred,
he said sharply, giving me a fright.
You mentioned something about a party tonight.
Soon we were dressed and ready and out on our way. Surely this was a miracle, one had to say. He had come bearing gifts and was going inside when he stopped to look up because he had spied that Santa Claus fellow, I exclaimed in the dark.
Master Bruce simply smiled, looked up, and said,
"Thanks, Clark."
And I heard Batman say as he walked out of sight,
"Merry Christmas to all. Well, at least for tonight."
May you enjoy whatever holidays you celebrate this year. So happy holidays. I'll be back next week with more interviews. But until then, keep reading your comics.